Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
What is up, everyone? My name is Jacob Minnig, host of Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today, I have the honor and privilege of being here with JP, being an honorary special guest. JP, thank you for being on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. It's an honor being here with you. Thank you.
Yeah, man. We're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be exciting. I can't wait to learn more about you. For those who don't know, I was actually social media friends with JP first before we became co-workers over at Twin Cities Wellness Center Recovery Gym. And yeah, I'm excited to learn more about you, JP, as just as a fellow advocate, co-worker, friend. I'm excited.
Ella, I'm excited too, man.
Yeah. So again, we all have special stories and everything, especially about perseverance, recovery, man. And I cannot again hear about, okay, I would not wait to hear about your story and everything. Where would you like to begin? What motivates you, man?
Not sure. Change. I wanted to change, man. I think that was the biggest motivating factor for me. I just wanted to change. I'm from Chicago. I was on the streets, man, pretty much for like 30 years. Just out there, being an ex-drug dealer, gangbanger. This is my past before the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty much drinking every day for like 25 years. It was, you know, so I was pretty much raised on the street.
What part of Chicago were you raised from?
From the west side of Chicago.
West side? Okay.
Yeah, the west side. The best side is what they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, we grew up in just violence, man. It was just all around. It was like, you know, we go to a club and they were shooting at the club every Friday. It was like, man, it was nice. It was a nice party. Let's go back. You know, let's go back next Friday. And like, it was like a everyday thing. Like, you know. It just was our lifestyle. You know, it was always something happening. It was always something happening around every day. Gunshots every day. Sometimes full times a day. So,
okay.
You know, yeah. Seen a lot of stuff growing up, in, you know, my day.
So I just have to ask, you know, you don't need to get too much detail if you don't want to, but like, what originally got you into drug dealing? Was it just one of the few opportunities you felt like you had to make some money? Or?
It's a biopsychosocial model. It was, you know, just my environment. I grew up poor. We grew up under the poverty level. Me and my mom, you know what I'm saying, living in a studio. Then we moved to the west side. And it was, my mom just couldn't, you know, afford some stuff. I was playing basketball, trying to stay out of the street. Like, I didn't want to be involved. In the beginning, I didn't want to be involved in the streets. So we used to go to this thing, like an after school program, and we played ball for them, and you know, for the school and stuff like that, and different other people on the streets, coaches and stuff. So we did our best, like, to stay involved and, like, you know, active and not be on being on the streets when we was younger. And then we used to go to this after school program. You know, go there. It was like a sort of like our safe haven, so to speak, when we was younger. And then it, like, pretty much closed down. So during the middle of my childhood, it was like it closed down. Like, we didn't really have nowhere to go after that, like, but the streets. You know, and I grew up the only child, man. So it was just me. So I left out the streets, man, and just like, that's what I took towards. And plus, my mom couldn't afford all of, you know what I'm saying, the shoes. I got holes in my shoes. I see people out there with nice Jordans on, and I'm playing basketball, and people looking cool and stuff. And Yeah. And we've seen the drug dealers out there hanging around the basketball court. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, pretty much like just a matter of time. You know what I'm saying? They was giving us money and stuff. And, you know, and we turned our attention to that and pretty much instead of basketball.
Okay. This is kind of a two-part question. When you were at the center, did you meet, like, any good, like, role models in your life or, like, male role models?
It wasn't too many. It was a couple. Mm-hmm. But, like, we found out some stuff that really wasn't, you know, role model-ish. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really too many role models growing up where I'm from. You know what I'm saying? Like, we looked up to, like, Michael Jordan and stuff mm-hmm. like that, like, people that we've seen on the TV. You know, it wasn't too many role models, like, growing up. And if they was, it wasn't really cool. You know, yeah. they didn't understand or knew, like, the type of stuff that we was involved with, you know. But it was just, it wasn't too many role models growing up. I didn't grow up with a father. Mm-hmm. So I probably seen my father, like, twice, you know. Okay. But it wasn't really, you know, I mean, my uncle, you know, my mm-hmm. uncle, you know, rest in peace, man. He was, like, the thing that that showed me, like, what a man is, you know what I'm saying, I'm supposed to do and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that's, like, that's the only, and you know what I mean? And we wasn't, he didn't have a lot of money, you know, but he took care of his family, you know what I'm saying? So it was, yeah, that's, like, that's pretty much, like, the, you know, and my uncle, I had another uncle, too. But I didn't really see them. But my uncle, the one I just spoke about, like, he stayed upstairs with me. So that was like, yeah.
What I'm getting is that he kind of proved to you or everyone around him, like, you can still be a man. You can still support your family without being rich and having all the glamour.
Yeah. But, you know, at that point in time, I didn't, you know, I didn't, I mean, I think about it now. Mm-hmm. But, like, I didn't want to be like that because I was, like, I didn't want to be poor and I don't want to be, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't appealing to me at that time, like the streets was, you know? So I didn't take grasp of that or, like, grasp hold of that once the streets, like, kind of sucked me in, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was, like, you know, yeah. But I remember that, you know, as I'm starting to change, like, I remember that in his examples and stuff like that.
So my second part of the question, and I'll go off of this more, but do you feel like that's the main issue, not just with like the big city life, but like on the country where teens and adults get in trouble when there just isn't a lot to do? Like you get rid of rec centers and so forth, and there's nothing for, I guess, the adolescents to do. And then they get into like the bad negative stuff in life.
Yeah, because, you know, we had outside stuff, you know, we had a basketball coach, which was my cousin's buddy. And we did, you know, we had a basketball team like outside, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Okay.
You know, we went to the neighborhood basketball, gyms and stuff like that, or outside parks, mm-hmm. and we practiced and we got put in tournaments and different stuff like that. So nice. It was like, that was like our getaway. You know, we didn't want to smoke. I used to walk around with a smoking stinks button.
I don't know if you remember
the white buttons with the smoke.
I think so. Yeah.
I don't ever want to smoke. I don't ever want to drink. I don't ever want to do drugs. And this was everybody's doing around me. You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't want to be a part of that. Like, we wanted mm-hmm. We wanted to play basketball. We wanted to go to the NBA. We wanted to do all this.
Yep.
And we started out playing basketball when we was young. It was like 7, you know what I mean? 7, 9 and stuff like that. So, it's just, as we going up to these parks, like, we seeing different type of stuff. As we getting older, we realize we broke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. I mean? You're younger, you don't really thinking about it. But when you can't afford a lot of stuff, you know what I'm saying, just see other people with, or just, you know, just afford regular stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you see a drug dealer, hey man, here, go to the store for me, and you know what I'm saying, he give you a 50 and he getting something for like $4 and tell you to keep the change, you know. It started getting appealing, especially when they start closing down these like the rec centers and mm-hmm. after school programs. Like those kept us out of, you know, we went on trips and did different things. Like those were kept us like out of the streets for the most part, you know, pretty much like every day.
You think in some sick way they were like recruiting kids for the lifestyle?
Yeah. Yes and no, mm-hmm. because it was a choice. Like we, you know, we had a choice. Like, you know, it wasn't like, it wasn't like, you know, it was like, hey man, do this. You know, they was just there. Like that was they block, and you know, that's what they was doing.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to leave, so they sent us to the store. Like they didn't be like, here go a pack. You do what you do with it. Like, no, it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of a, it got to a point where like, hey man, how can I be down? You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So it wasn't really like no recruiting unless it was indirectly, you know what I mean? But it wasn't no, hey, actually, to be honest with you, to be 100 with you, they didn't want us to be involved with that.
Okay.
You know, to be 100, like, nah, man, you don't want to do this. You don't want to get in. Stay what you doing. Stay playing ball. And we was like, nah, we want some money.
yeah.
You know, we want some money. I got holes in my shoes, man. I need to make some money. You know what I'm saying? It was more of that. And you see lifestyle, you see the girls, you see the cars, mm-hmm. and, you know what I'm saying? You just see like the street prestige and stuff like that. Like we started getting, you know, we started noticing some stuff. So it wasn't mm-hmm. really more, it wasn't really like no, recruiting. And like I said, actually they wanted us to stay out of that type of life. That's why they was giving us money and stuff like to go to the store and stuff like that. So they never, you know, and they people kind of hid it from us. So we didn't really mm-hmm. know what they was doing until we got older, you know. And they, you know, they betted on our games and stuff like that. So it was like, you know, it wasn't to be 100 with you, it wasn't like no recruitment. It was more of a we want to be down.
So also, is it more like the lifestyle could be a drug in itself because of all the like the positive things as a kid? You're thinking about like the money, the women, the cars, the clothes. Enticing.
I'm a person in long-term recovery, and that's what I'm recovering from.
Mm-hmm.
The lifestyle, you know what I mean, drugs and alcohol was just like, you know, I drank and smoked, man, pretty much every day for 25 years, and that was just part of the lifestyle.
Okay.
Like, I couldn't, if I wasn't involved with the lifestyle, I don't think I would be doing any drugs, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, or drinking, especially hanging in the streets and we seeing death all the time, man, 24/7. Mm-hmm. It was just like it started off as a coping mechanism first.
Okay.
You know, for us to cope living in a high pressure environment, yep. Chaotic environment, man. And then it just became, a bonding. It was a bonding thing, and you know what I'm saying? It just became like it got problematic like during my mm-hmm. older years.
Now, I'm just curious now, like, what was that point in your life where you made that major change? Or was it a particular event that just inspired you, motivated you to, like, I got to get out of here. I got to do something in my life. Then you moved to Minnesota, or how did that go about?
Yeah, that was, you know what I mean? It was people, man, I probably, from the age of 16, I can say before the age of 16. Before the age of 16 up until, like, 32.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people didn't die, man, in front of me and got shot. You know what I'm saying? It's like we seen a lot. And it was just, I was getting older. I was getting older, man, and I didn't see no future where I was at. So I decided to make a move to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Come here and try to expand my horizon, so to speak. Because I tried to go to school in Chicago. It didn't work. So I just got sucked right back in the streets, you know what I'm saying? So it wasn't, I tried to go to college right after high school. I did graduate high school.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to go to college like right after, but it didn't work. We ended up drinking in the parking lot and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was, you know, it didn't work out. So yeah, mm-hmm. I moved to Minnesota, man, to try to expand my horizon.
Okay. Was it like, did you have like family in Minnesota, or was it just a clean break? You're just going to go to Minnesota.
Clean break.
Wow. That takes courage, man.
Yeah, I knew some people up here, but okay. I was just ready to start something new. I was just ready to change. I've been in this life for too long, man. It's just, you know what I'm saying? That's all you see is like death, and you just don't see no future. You know, it's not too many jobs in Chicago. It's not mm-hmm. too many opportunities. Everything they have that was positive is like they took it away from people, wow. from kids, and just, you know what I mean? It's like not that many opportunities, man, in Chicago for me, especially being a person from the street. So, I moved to Minnesota, and that didn't take off too well, but in the first beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. Was it just because like you didn't have any direction, or like did you have a job when you first got here? Like,
I didn't have no direction, mm-hmm. and I got a job. It took me a couple months, like 3 months, for me to get a job. Now I was looking, You know, I was looking, trying to do the right thing, you know, steady drinking and stuff with my partner that was up here. But, you know, I wanted to do the right thing. I'm like, I'm changed. I got a new venue. You know, it's a brand new start. I got a job doing collections for a magazine company.
Okay.
And they was doing drugs in there.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. It was, and drinking, you know what I'm saying? So I ended up, my addiction is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I ended up, like, pretty much, like, selling drugs. Like, every type of job I had, it's like I couldn't break away from, like, dealing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, so, yeah, so I started selling. Started messing with this girl at work, and she got me fired. And...
Yep. That's how I know. That's how it goes.
She got me fired. I know we talk about this a lot.
Don't shit where you eat.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear you.
So I just took my last check. You know, I was upset and just felt like, you know, I was hopeless by then, because that kind of broke me. My spirit and stuff, my confidence was low, and, you know, it was just like, forget it. I'm just destined to sell drugs. So, like, that's what I did.
Okay.
So I went back. I brought the streets of Chicago up here, you know, with me. So I started selling up here.
Okay.
You know, I figured that was my life. You know, I figured I was just hopeless. I was, you know, I didn't have no hope. I put all my validity into that job. You know, just trying to, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm working on some stuff, and then this type of stuff happened, and, like, it killed myself. It killed the little self-esteem that I had left. Yeah.
Because you had expectations for yourself, right?
Yeah.
What could happen?
You know, I wanted to change. You know, I wanted to change, and this was my attempt at changing. You know, so it didn't work out like how I thought it would have. And I felt destroyed, man. I felt defeated. You know, I just felt like I'm just destined to be a drug dealer. I might as well go back to do something I'm good at. I feel that I'm good at.
Yeah.
You know.
So at this point, like, you were not quite in recovery, where you maybe had the mindset of, I want to live a better life. However, like, I'm okay with drinking a little bit, doing this or that a little bit, but I just want a better life until this happens. And then do you make a switch a little bit after?
Not really.
Okay.
I didn't know nothing about recovery. I thought everybody drank and smoked and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened before I like to say my second wave of drug use. You know, I used to pretty much sell everything except, like, heroin. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get down with that. I didn't want that on my conscience. But you know, it was just it was when I started selling meth. That's when, and I used it for the first time. Like, that's when the party, this downward spiral started. That's when I, like,
you never thought. Started. Yeah. Did you ever think you would ever try meth? Is that kind of like a shock to you?
No, I wasn't. It was because how I felt about myself. You know, it's like, I might as well just try it once. You know what I'm saying? Like, what could it hurt? You know what I mean? I'm already feeling like a piece of crap. You know what I mean? So I just was like, okay, might as well try it. You know, and what could go, you know, what else could be wrong with me? You know, type of stuff. But I never, in my 30 years on the streets of Chicago, like, all I did was just, like, smoke weed and, like, drink. You know, I never, when Ecstasy came out, and did a couple of those or something, you know, but it wasn't no, like, big. I didn't have no super big hard drug stuff going
right.
on. But when I started selling meth, and I tried it, that's when everything started.
Yeah.
That's where it started at, right there, yeah.
So how old were you at this point then?
I was 32.
32, okay.
32, 33, somewhere in there.
So it says the change is coming soon now in your life. I can sense, like, something's happening.
Yeah.
Not yet?
Not yet? No, not yet. No, it got worse. it just didn't get like that. You know, I made a couple dollars off of it. And the more I got, the more I used. So it was like that. And it just it went up, and then it was like a roller coaster, like it's like,
yep.
That's what happened. So I went up, you know, made a lot of money off of it. But I started using a little bit more, you know, started ducking behind stuff a little bit more and dealing with women and, you know, dealing with all different types of stuff. And, you know what I'm saying? The more I did, like, the more it affected me, you know what I mean? To, like, you know, psychosis, all type of stuff, man. Yep. It got real dark at one point in time. I became homeless.
Okay.
At one point, I started out having a house and an apartment and a couple cars, and you know what I mean? And then I just started using. Me and my ex got into it, you know what I'm saying? And I started using more, and then I broke my rule to not use with people who I sell it to.
Okay.
And I broke that rule, and that's when it started spiraling down here.
Like a value system? You broke your values too?
I broke my value system. Because I didn't.
That's the worst. That's the worst.
Yeah, it was the worst, you know. And I already felt bad about myself and being hugging into it. She was my business partner, so to speak. And then we just, you know, it got worse. It just like, you know what? And I probably would sell it to like 10 to 20 people out there. And I'm using with like everybody. So by the time 10 o'clock comes, just like, you know, 10 o'clock at night, it's just like, everybody's after me. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't even be an effective drug dealer. You know what I'm saying?
Because
I'm weary about everybody. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, and I, you know, yeah, that's, yeah.
So then you were also homeless, right?
Yeah. End up, being homeless in 2015 to 2018, 15, 16, 17, 18. It was possibly 2014, but I'm guessing 2015, 2018.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would you say like this was like the lowest point in your life?
This is definitely the lowest point. I'm sleeping on people's back porches, man. I'm sleeping on trains. Got locked up a couple times, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just, you know, it was really bad. I'm sleeping over people's houses and stuff, turning their apartments into trap houses, man. It's just, you know, it was just the only people I didn't change clothes for like 27 days, like 20 days, and you know what I mean? Yeah. Like people like, oh, you stink, but let me get them drugs and you can leave. You know, it's just peeling the socks off the bottom of my feet, man. It was bad.
Were there like any sober people in your life at this point, or did you have family members that were worried about you, try to get a hold of you?
Yes and no, but you know what I'm saying is my family had kind of wrote me off, so to speak, because of the gang activity and stuff like that. Like I was pretty much like the black sheep already.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, my mom called me every now and then, you know, checked up on me, prayed for me. That's probably one of the reasons why I'm still here. I feel, you know, my mom kept me in my prayers and stuff like that, man, which really mean a lot to me to this day, because I was out there in the madness, man. And, everybody's dying around me, and, you know, God kept me here for a reason. So, you know, just that. You know, I didn't really, you know, in the midst of my madness, man, I really didn't think about too many people. You know, I didn't have any sober, I didn't have any sober people in my life at that point in time. I think everybody, I was in the game. You know what I'm saying? I was like in the game. The only sober person was probably my probation officer. So, yeah, it's, you know what I'm saying? And that, you know, it was bad, man. It was, I stayed in like the acute psychiatric, you know what I'm saying, services and, you know, wards and stuff like that, man. I've been to, you know, the hospitals and stuff because I suffer with mental illness myself, just without the drugs because of, you know, all the stuff I've been through in my life. I found that out when I got to Minnesota. I ain't know nothing about that. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, and then with that type of drug on top of it, you know what I'm saying? It just made me, it made it worse, like a million times worse. So I got probably, man, like a sheet this long of me going to the hospital, being in the hospital, and stuff like that, man. Just, you know. And it was just dark, man. I walked around, man, for like 3 or 4 days at a time. You know what I'm saying? Like not sleeping. Oh, wow. I think the most I stayed up was like 27 days, man. I slept for 3.
Oh, wow.
You know, I walked so much one time that my toenail fell off. I walked so much, you know. It was bad.
Did they make you go to treatment at this time, like probation or anything? No residential
I wasn't ready. I was staying in hotel rooms, man. We had a minivan. I was staying in the minivan. You know what I'm saying? No, they didn't. Only thing was, you know, I was to try to get sober before I see my probation officer. And I used to fall asleep at his desk because I've been up for 2 weeks. And he's like, "We're going to lock you up if you get in high." I'm like, "No, man. I was just working overtime." You know what I'm saying? I was like, "Okay, you sure?" Yeah. So it wasn't, nobody. You know what? I think I did. I think I called it DWI or something like that. And then they sent me to treatment, inpatient, which is just for 30 days. So after 30 days, I just went back out there. I just went back out and used.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So who was that person, or if it was a person that like reached their hand out to you to help you through this to the point where like you wanted to be in recovery? And what, like, you know, was there a moment or a person that it really helped you?
If it's safe to say God, you know what? Yes, it was a person. It was a person that got my clock turning. Paul Custerman.
Okay.
Shout out to Paul. Love you, Paul. That was like the first encounter that I had. You know, I used to go to drug court with my ex. She is in drug court. I just used to go there just to support her and stuff. And then she had to go to RCCS.
Okay.
So I went with her to a graduation. You know, this was where the seed was planted.
Okay.
So I really, I really appreciate Anna Paul for this. Like, he didn't even know me, like, you know. So I went down there in the hot basement. They was graduating. he was talking, man. He was just so passionate. He was sweating and talking about how good it is, like, to be in recovery. And, how proud he was of the graduates and what they had been through and came out of, you know, and just, and talking about the importance of, like, you know, helping out the community, bettering yourself. You know, like, I still remember this, like, to this day. I wasn't even sober at that point in time. Like I said, I wasn't in that program, but I went, you know, I went to that graduation. And I also went to, like, a couple of alumni meetings that they had with her, and how he was and how he greeted me, you know what I mean? And he was just, you know, and that was my, like, first encounter of, like, recovery. You know what I'm saying? Nice. I didn't know nothing about recovery at all. You know what I'm saying? And, like, people affect you indirectly, and, you know, they don't even know. And, like, he was one of them. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, because I always supported her, even though I was selling and still using, she was getting clean. Like, I always kept it away from her and stuff, and I wanted her to do better. I went to the grad. I think I might have been high down there. But, maybe one day I probably will get sober clean. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Was he a counselor there, or is he a worker there, or who's this? Who? You know, Paul.
No, Paul was the owner.
Owner
of RCC.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was, you know, speaking in behalf of, like, the graduates and, you know, his treatment place and stuff, and, you know, just talking, and he was passionate about it. And he spoke for like 2 hours, and he was sweating, and it was hot in that basement. And, like, I didn't even care. You know what I'm saying? I'm sweating with him, so, because it was really hot in there. And he was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna say this one thing, and I'm gonna leave, and I'm gonna get, you know, I'm done." But it never happened. But I was like listening, and taking in like what he was saying, even though it was super high. It was like 150 degrees in the basement, in that church basement.
That's when you know it's special. That's when you know it's special.
Yeah, it was real special. And I didn't even want to move. I was listening to what he was saying and just like, you know, paying attention, like to, you know, and I think about this to this day, like, man, that's crazy. Cause I used to be like, man, I'm out of here, you know, especially me being using and stuff. And like, I feel like I'm attacked and stuff like that, but he didn't come across, you know, he didn't come across like that. He just came across like logically, rationally, and just about, you know, cynical and stuff about what he was talking about. But you can see the passion, you know, you can see, you know, how he cared and stuff like that. And he had me, you know, and that was like the first time that I ever thought about, you know, like being clean, like, you know, trying it and seeing what that looks like.
I have to ask you, you know, as human beings and as people, some of our greatest regrets is just not telling someone how much they meant to us or what they did to inspire us. Like, did you ever get a chance to tell Paul, like, everything that you felt about him, what he did for you?
Yes.
Yeah, see, that's beautiful, though. Like, that's a beautiful thing.
I tell him all the time, every chance I get, you know. Yeah, you know, I just let him know. You know, he's you know, the type that, you know, he just, you know, is just his being, you know, is, you know, it's just something that he does, you know. Okay. Yeah, but I did and I do, you know, and like that's, yeah, you know.
Yeah, and just getting back to those treatment graduations, man. If anyone's never been to one or been part of one in any way, man, they are special. Like I love the ones that we throw too. You know, they're just I get something out of them every time. Just even though like I'm not the client graduating, man, they're just special. They're beautiful, man. It's just an amazing time.
It's an honor, man. It's just an honor and a privilege, like to be a part of their transformation and growth. You know, whether it be indirectly or directly, whether it's our clients individually or the clients that we're working with individually or, you know, the clients that's working with other people, but just to see them back and forth and, you know, giving them suggestions, talking to them and they sucking it in and to see them graduate, man, their confidence is, they looking good too from being working with the tap dance guru in the gym, you know, and and just, you know, just seeing them how they change and how they probably crawled in until the graduation. Like, you know, our job is stressful, man. It's emotionally tiring and just mentally, physically. And then you go to a graduation and you see people stand tall with their chin out when you see them crawl in. Yep. And now they just, you know, turn into butterflies, man. It's just like recharge my batteries. It's always a constant reminder of like why I do this, you know, why I signed up for this, you know. So some days it'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to pull my hair out. And, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If I had hair, I would be pulling that out.
You know, I think that's why I don't got none now. But no, it's, you know what I'm saying? But it's just to see that and just witness and then. You know, have like somebody was at somebody mom was at the graduation, man. One of my clients and was like, man, I got my son back. I finally got my son back. Like that right there was powerful, man. You know what I'm saying? Like that did something to me. Like, you know what? This is why I signed up for that. This is why I signed up for this. You know what I'm saying? Like to say, hey, man, I finally got my son back. You know, and it's just that, you know what I'm saying? It gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, man. And just to see the impact that we have on just not other people's lives, but their families, man, the generations and stuff like that. It's like crazy to think about.
Well, it's a part of a spiritual process, man. You know? And that's the best, like, when you can impact someone, you don't even know it. But, like, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, like, you run into them, they just tell you what, like, you meant to them, their lives. It's just, again, a beautiful thing. Really is. So going back like I said, it's just, you know, we like sometimes as counselors we forget about that, you know, because of all the negative stuff that happens and the drama documentation, you know, all the like the boring stuff that we don't want to do, you know, when we forget about that process, man.
Yeah, and it's, you know what I'm saying, and they growing like every day, and you know what I'm saying, like you can see a difference in like people's lives every day, but it's just a whole like they shine when they graduate, you know what I'm saying. It's like they accomplished something, they did something, set out, you know, anything is an accomplishment. Even workout is an accomplishment. Finish a workout. Yep. So just imagine you finish a outpatient treatment center, man, and you just and you did good and you did your best, man, and you graduated. Just, you know what I'm saying? Just feeling good about life, about your change, and having just to having a hand with that indirectly, just being a part of that, you know, it's amazing in itself.
Yep. So going back to your first RCCS meeting that you were there, you were attending, or you were there to, you know, so you said the seed was planted, but did you still go about your ways a little bit longer?
Yes.
Yep. Yep. Hey, that's yeah. Okay though. Still.
No. Yeah. It was. I just, you know, it was just planting seed. I was, you know, I was up back from the pre-contemplation stage. I wasn't in the pre-contemplation stage of change yet. You know, I still was out there. You know, it's still. You know, I just thought about it. It was just like a brief, you know, well, I ain't gonna say a brief. I thought about it for a couple of weeks. I really wanted to try to do it, but I just didn't know what that looked like.
Yep.
You know, I was still out there and just, you know, and then I went to jail with DWI. and that was messed up. I did that and got out in 2018, and I still went back out there.
Okay.
I was in the trap house. This is what happened with the change. I was in the trap house doing what I do. I always tell the stories. You got people. You got five people holding on the bubble around the bubble on this side. You got one, two people here shooting up. And I'm just waiting on them to get done. I've been high for like 5 days. And then I just had this is what I like to call a divine intervention, man. It's just something happened to where it's like, and like my whole life just like started flashing in front of my eyes, man. And then I just like snapped out of it and looked around and was just like, what am I doing here? What am I doing? You know, yeah. And this was my everyday thing for a long time. And for this moment, for me to think about what am I doing here? This can't be my life. You know, like, and like I said, I've been high and drinking 5 days. And like, I've been doing this for a while. Like, this is an everyday thing. But at this moment, that moment of time is where I realized I really have to make a change. And, you know, that's what I like to say when God called me, you know.
What was that first big change you had to make in your life?
I held myself accountable. I didn't know what accountability was, but I knew I wanted to help. So I went and told my probation officer, who was threatening to throw me in jail for being high. I was just fed up. I was just, it's just the gift of desperation, man. So I told him, I said, you know what? I'm finna put some pressure on me. And I'm finna tell my probation officer. I'm just like, hey, sir, I just want to let you know that, you was right. I have been using, and I really need some help. I don't know how about going about doing that. And really, so I didn't care at that point. If I had to go to jail or if I had to do whatever, I was willing to do whatever it takes.
I owned it.
And I was willing to do whatever it takes. I'm like, cause I just knew he was going to take me to jail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, well, if he do that, then I'm just going to get clean in jail. However it go, I'm just like, really, I'm ready to stop. Mm-hmm. And I have to put some pressure on myself because or else I'm not going to do it. So and to my surprise, he was like, I'm glad you said that, man. I'm glad you said that. We're going to get you some help. I'm like, man.
All right.
So I moved into a shelter. I filled out the paperwork and intake and stuff at the treatment center I went to. And they didn't, I called them for 2 weeks. I'm checked into a shelter. I'm sleeping on the floor, you know, I'm sleeping on the floor at Dorothy Day. you know what I mean? I haven't been to the shelter since I've been homeless. So, you know what I'm saying? It was kind of a humbling experience for me. And I was waiting for 2 weeks there and they said they didn't have a bed. I said, you know what? I'm finna go down there. So I went down there, and they said, we got a bed open for you.
Nice.
You know, as soon as I went down there. So I went down there, yeah. And that was the start, man.
Absolutely, man.
Spent almost a year in treatment. That's when I found out about the lifestyle. Like I couldn't string together 3 months. Mm-hmm. I kept going out there trying. I'm sober. I can make all the money now. Let me go try to sell some stuff. And I mean, you know what I'm saying? So it's, I had to learn how to be. And when I realized that it was that, and the women and stuff like that, once I realized that these are the issues that I had, I had to learn how to be broke. That's what I like to call it.
Your values changed over time.
Yeah. I didn't want to do this stuff. You know what I'm saying? So like every time I tried to do it, I ended up getting high somewhere. I hadn't even had a bright idea. I'm finna bootleg liquor. I'm not finna mess with drugs. Just go on the train and sell liquor. And I end up drinking with a girl, and then I end up using them. I got another A ball in my hand. So it's
A, B, and C.
Like, why does this keep bringing me back here? So I had to learn how because I understood the fact that like I couldn't idolized money. Yeah. And I felt I couldn't live without it. I felt like less than myself if I didn't have it. So I realized that, and I was like, hey, two things I have to start doing. Start leaving these women alone and learn how to be broke. So I started going to meetings. I'm like, I'm not going to talk to no girls. I'm not going to do anything. If I learn how to be broke. So I thought about what can I do that didn't take any money. And it was volunteer work.
Okay.
Service work.
Yeah, you just start doing all the things for all the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, this is, you know, I'm a believer, man. And it was God talking to me about different type of stuff. Because 9 times out of 10, an ex-drug dealer is not going to think about volunteer work. You know what I'm saying? It's like that was the first, like, nobody even talked to me about volunteer work. It's like, okay, I do some volunteer work. So I did, though. I like to say this, too. I was at the Salvation Army doing volunteer work, and I didn't have it all together at this point. And this is why I understood that you don't have to have it all together to help somebody. I had a spoon with spaghetti. Mm-hmm. I was putting spaghetti, and people was in there that's experiencing homelessness, man. And the guy was like, hey, man, you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here helping us. And I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Right there.
You know, another guy behind him was like, thanks. I'm like, and you know, for them to be in the worst time in their life, not only do I know what they've been through, or what they're going through, but they still have the gratefulness enough to say thank you. And I'm looking at my spoon with spaghetti. I'm like, it's just spaghetti. But you know what I'm saying? But it meant a lot to me. Like that's when like the ice stopped melting off my heart, man. It was dope.
Well, yeah, people get like a drive or a high just helping people and everything in need, man. It's special.
That's what that was, and that's like that was the catalyst of like to a lot. So. As I come, I'm coming back. I'm like, hey, how you doing? I'm like the spaghetti. I'm like the Tom Cruise with spaghetti.
There we go.
Hey, how you doing? And my back wheel, like, hey. Yep. You know? And it was like a pleasure to be there with them. You know what I'm saying? They used to get to know me and stuff. It was dope.
Yeah, absolutely. They sensed that from you, that you wanted to be there. You were happy. You were at peace with being there. And yeah, and clients can even sense that from like staff members and counselors too.
Yeah. You know, so I want to be there, and I let them know all the time too, man. That you know, I'm honored to be here with you guys, with your growth. You know, so it's like you know, it's it is. But yeah, it's you know, it's an honor to be here with you guys and stuff, and just let them know that we care, and like it's, you know, I like being there with them, to be involved in their lives, man. You know, and it's, and that was the catalyst of doing all the other stuff that I do too. You know,
No, that reminds me, back when I worked at an adolescent treatment center or whatever, one day, I was just with a client and this teenage, you know, boy just said how much he appreciated me. He's like, Jake, I know you deal with a lot of crap here from the other kids and everything, but I just want to say I appreciate you because I know you could be out there somewhere else making a lot more money than you do, but you're here with us helping us, so I appreciate it. Like that melted my heart, so I can relate to a lot of things that you say regarding that, JP.
Yeah, it helped mold in my whole thought around how I feel about money. You know what I'm saying? It's the way I felt about it. I don't feel like that no more. You know what I'm saying? That the most important and valuable currency now is time. You know what I'm saying? It has always been. You know what I'm saying? It's time. You know, we can't – you can get money. You can't get time back.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't – you know, you can't get that back. So it's like, what you doing with that time? You know what I'm saying? People are like, you do a lot. You do a lot. I'm like, man, you know what I'm saying? I spent a lot of wasted time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I wasted a lot of time. And time is the most important currency in this world, man. And you know what I'm saying? If I can – I pretty much dedicated my life to helping people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's not a breath that I don't breathe, pretty much. You know what I'm saying? Unless I'm doing some self-care.
Right.
I got to do that. But you know what I'm saying? It's like my whole life is based around that. I'm a counselor. I'm the CEO of a recovery community organization, and I'm a part of the ministry of my church, ICCM Life Center. So, you know what I'm saying? And my whole life is just based around helping people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just I dedicated my life to helping people feel less broken.
Amen. And you know, another way to think about all, like, wasted time, because I feel that way too sometimes when I look back at my life. But if we didn't have the events that happened to us in our lives, we wouldn't be where we are today.
That's what my pastor explained to me. You know, because it's a lot of stuff that I did in my past that I regret. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And one of those things is the waste of time. And you know what I'm saying? I was talking to my pastor about it, like, and I just, you know, if I, one thing I regret is not doing it sooner, not changing my life sooner. You know what I'm saying? Like, and in the past, I was like, man, yo, what you've been through is a testimony for other people to hear so that, you know, they won't go through the same thing that you went through and possibly find a purpose faster than we found ours.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And I thought about that. I was like, you won't think about you. You won't think like that in 5 years. You know what I'm saying? And it's just, you know, I love my church and the people in it, man. It's like, it is. That's just a big support system for me too.
Yep.
You know, just having any type of people that believe in you, you know what I'm saying? That's positive. It is pretty dope. Mm-hmm. So I stopped thinking like that. Once they said that, I stopped thinking that way and just try to use, like, the stuff that I've been, what we've been through made us who we are now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what make us unique. That's what make us, you know, different, you know what I'm saying? But yet still the same, so to speak, you know? So it's like, yeah.
And the one thing I always say too, to all my clients and everything, however you want to call yourself, is like someone in recovery or an addict. I truly believe addicts are people addicted to drugs and alcohol are the most spiritually gifted people in this world. To my core, I believe that.
I think so too. Some of the most strongest, some of the most resilient people, you know, to get through some stuff, man, mm-hmm. to get through adversity in the midst of chaos, you know what I'm saying? To even go through the stuff that they didn't,
mm-hmm.
we didn't been through to get drugs, to do, you know what I'm saying? To do them, to get them, you know what I'm saying? Like, people wake up with not a dollar in their pocket, but it's destined or premeditated to get high somehow.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? It takes some creativity, man. It takes some, you know what I'm saying? It takes.
It does.
It takes, you know what I'm saying? Like, like the stuff that I've been through. Like, I was just explaining to you about, you know, how I regret a lot of stuff, but a lot of my stuff, my skills is transferable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It allowed me to
adaptability.
Adaptability. Just, you know, allow me to, like, being business-minded, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Just like a lot of different, being creative with marketing or with all this different type of stuff, you know, networking mm-hmm. with people. You know what I'm saying? I network with a lot of people across the United States, man. And it's, you know what I'm saying? And this, what I've been through opened that ability up for me because mm-hmm. I had to do the same thing, like, pretty much in the drug world. You know what I'm saying? So now I use my powers for good now.
Mm-hmm, there you go. That's a lot of power.
Yeah, I use my powers for good now. And, you know, networking and, you know what I'm saying, collaborating with different people, man, to help people, to help change people's lives. You know, it's a dope experience.
You know, like, one mindset I always take too, like, if somebody was, like, gone through a similar experience as you have or whatever, and they're applying for a CEO job or any type of business or whatever, I would love for them to, like, look at that, like, wow, I cannot wait to see this guy's potential or this woman's or individual's potential on what they could do in my job, in my field, after everything they went through, take that mindset to look at that stuff. And my, yeah. I'd be like, my God, I cannot wait what they're going to do for me or what they're going to do for themselves in my company. And that's the stance you want people to see. Unfortunately, they don't look to that. They only look at the negatives.
Yeah, I do my best to see the positive in everybody. Everybody has, you know what I'm saying? Everybody has a positive side, whether you see it or not. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has a good side to them. You know, and I do my best to try to look at that. You know, because I've been spending my whole life basing stuff on negativity and judging and all this different type of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like people like, oh man, you know, you shouldn't do that, or you know, you should do that. No, yes, I should, because everybody should be respected for one as a human being, and everybody has some type of potential in them. Just because their light's dim, don't mean that they don't have a light. Period. They probably just need a little spark from you to, you know, what I'm saying, to help ignite that light back again.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And that can just be like a kind word. Okay, hey, I believe in you. Oh, hey, you know what? You know, hey, I really think that, you know what I'm saying, that you're really capable. I think you're worthy of a better life. You know, and I think you underestimate yourself. You know, even just telling somebody, hey, nice shoes, you know what I'm saying? Just give a compliment. Yeah. That can probably stop them from jumping off the bridge that they probably thought about doing before they even got a hold of you. That's how easy and that's how indirectly you can change people's lives, man. You don't know what people are going through mentally or what type of demons that they slaying in their head.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And you thinking negative because of what you have going on in the inside and you projecting that out to somebody else instead of just giving them a kind word. Hey, you know what? You're looking good today. Yeah. You know, hey, nice shoes, or you know, nice. I like the way your fingernails look today, or something.
Yeah.
Oh, these little things. Thank you so much. You know, you didn't know. I was just about to jump off the bridge, but you gave me a compliment and made me believe in myself, and thank you.
Yeah. That
meant a whole life to me.
Oh, I'm sure that scenario has happened in real life so many times.
I'm saying this. So many. You know what I'm saying? You know how many people walk around and say like, "Hey, man, somebody else say something crazy to me today." If somebody else says something crazy to me, that's going to be the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm going to beat them up and then jump off the bridge and shoot myself. And then they run into you and be like, hey, man, I just want to say, man, I think you're worthy of a better life. Or I think, you know, I just want to let's say, man, you're looking good today.
There we go.
After they was expecting somebody to say something bad because all the stuff that they possibly have been through that day. But then you say something good to them, that can nullify everything what they probably was thinking about before they even got in contact with you.
Amen. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and JP, that's why I do my best.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
To try to keep thinking about that type of stuff.
Yep. So, tell me and the audience more about Hope Dealers.
Yeah.
Minnesota and what Hope. That organization. Yep. What you're about.
We a recovery community organization. We got a Facebook page. We got a Facebook group. We about empowering people, helping people in recovery or people experiencing addiction and or homelessness, and doing what we can to help people's lives. We're a recovery community organization. So we're affiliated with ARCO, the Association of Recovery Community Organizations. Marco, the Minnesota Alliance of Recovery Community Organizations, and we just, it's a couple of recovery community organizations. I think it's like 20, 21. It might be a couple more.
Okay.
But we pretty much like resource brokers. So I network with people, I network with different RCOs, I network with treatment centers, addiction professionals to try to give people help with some direction what they're trying to do. Housing, different stuff like that. You know, we train peer recovery specialists. We host the peer recovery specialist training, which we have one coming up on March 13th, 13th through the 17th. So we partnered up with Minnesota Recovery Connection, and this year we partnered up with the Frogtown Recovery Cafe to host the peer recovery specialist training. So we you know, peer recovery specialists, recovery coaches, CPRS. So we do that and just try to bring different programs and different stuff, you know, to, you know, people experiencing addiction and stuff like that. Okay. So I work in conjunction too with my church, man, you know what I'm saying? So our church support us in what we're trying to do, which is dope. Shout out to the Life Center. And we're holding it there, March 13th. So we got a lot of different programs. My wife is a co-founder. Nice. She has a women empowerment conference coming up also on the 23rd. It's also going to be at the church, and we're just trying to do what we can to pretty much touch all the bases of empowering people.
Okay.
Kids too. I work with the youth ministry at my church. Even it's an opioid epidemic. Yes.
Yep.
But we have to go up the river and find out, and catch them before they fall. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I believe about working with the kids, before they even get to that point. Right. So we have like a Thursday program for kids and stuff. Like, I want to initiate like a basketball league and team and stuff like that for Northside kids and different, just kids who want to get involved, but just, kids from the hood, so to speak, and give them a different outlook. Because as I was talking, I remember, how effective it was with me before they closed it down, just to have some stuff like that, so I do that. And just whatever aspect I can, I'm taking donations of food, just all type of stuff. We do sober events. I haven't held a lot of events lately. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of stuff going on. I'm in school right now for social work. I'm also I'm dually enrolled student, so I go to Global University too, and plus I'm a full time counselor. So it's just a lot of programs we wasn't able to implement, but we're gonna start doing them this year. Speaker jams and all different type of stuff.
Well, you're a very busy man, and speaking of like going to school and everything, do you have any big goals in the next 5-10 years? Is there any big projects you want to work on? Or,
well, we just want to get more funding for the programs, for different programs that we want to implement. I'm working with therapy places. Partnering up with different therapy places because I believe in mental health and stuff. Mental health is big with me. So I want to be, especially since I'm getting into that field, I want to be able to have some services for people who need to speak with a therapist or, have those services available for people, besides just addiction resources, but also mental health resources for people so they can, continue with their mental health and stuff like that. So it's just, as long as we, continue, people support us and we get the funding, like it's a lot, grief and trauma, programs and different stuff like that. And just like whole different type of groups. And, I have a lot of ideas that I want to implement, but a lot of that stuff is going to take funding. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just doing what I can right now with what I have, or what we're able to do. Thank you for the supporters. This is why we sell hoodies and stuff like that, to try to implement some different things or stuff like that. Like, we had the Hope Dillathon. It was a resource fair, a speaker jam, and a dance party. You know, it's an all day event. Oh, nice. Stuff like that, and rent out the venues, and for the amount of time, and all that stuff takes money. So we're going to be looking for sponsors. We plan on doing it again. I'm just trying to find the right window when I can do that. If I had to break those three things up, then that's what I'm gonna have to do. But I want to. Okay. I'm trying to find a little window to where it's one day I can just have this event for people, and people from different treatment centers and different stuff, and people have tables up, resources, housing, jobs, all different type of stuff. I just want people to be able to have those resources like at their fingertips.
That's what it's about, man. Amen.
Yeah.
Well, JP, man, I just again want to say it's been a tremendous honor and pleasure having you on the show, man. It's been a blessing.
Thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate you, man. I really like your podcast, man. You have a lot of cool people on here.
Thank you.
So I'm honored to be a part of this, man. So thank you.
Yeah. And again, I'd love to have you on down the road again. It's been that great. And if any of my audience members want to get a hold of you, is there a particular email, website they can use to make contact with you?
Yeah, they can email me at jp@minnesotahopedealerswithaz.org. My email address is the website is www.minnesotahopedealers.org. So it has all of the information is there. I'm about to have some more hoodies made that's nice. Coming up soon. So I got you, Jacob.
Oh yeah. Anybody interested
in hoodies, I am taking pre-orders. Anybody just want to donate to my organization for the work that we're trying to do, that is a donation button on the website, Facebook Messenger, all that money goes to helping people who experience addiction and homelessness.
All right. Awesome. And I'll make sure I put all that information on my show notes. So it'll be one click away.
Yes.
And again,
so thank you, man.
It was a blessing, man. Thank you, JP.
Thanks for having me, Jake. I'll see you Monday.
Yep.
I again just want to thank JP for being an awesome and amazing special guest on my show. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support. And just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behavioralhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behavioralhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Calmigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale to, again, help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.